Hey folks, Heather Cox Richardson and Joanne Freeman here. Thank you for being members of the Cafe Insider community.
This is Backstage, a special segment of the Now and Then podcast exclusively for you. We hope you enjoy it.
So I love the fact, Joanne, that you and I both see this as a civil rights issue and as a federal state issue in the protection of civil rights. But that actually brings up a different part of participation in our democratic government. And when we were talking about this before, we discovered that you and I have both marched on Washington about this very issue, although we did not know each other at the time.
We did not. And we were at the same event, at the same march.
Isn't that so funny?
Which is kind of mind-blowing to me.
Somebody said to me after I went to this, and we'll talk about it in a minute, that everybody should march on Washington at least once in their lives, because what will happen is you will find yourself in the company of 100,000 or more other people with whom you have exactly nothing in common except the fact you care about that one issue.
Well, and you care about that one issue surrounded by the buildings of government, surrounded by the icons of government, so that you are there because you care passionately about something, surrounded by people who agree with you in caring passionately about that one thing. And in doing it, you can't help but be reminded that you're engaging in a right of protest. You're marching for a right that you believe in. In that way, it's personal. And I think I found it a profoundly moving experience.
Totally. I would totally agree with that. Although it's, for those of us who are not necessarily good with crowds, it is an experience to march on Washington, for sure. So this was did we decide it was 1989?
89, I think.
And it was the Mobilize for Women's Lives march on Washington. I confess I don't remember now what inspired it, except I know I was there because being a historian and at the time doing all the research that I was just talking about now, although was working on Congress and the Civil War, I couldn't help but in the 19th century newspapers, as you know, they're just absolutely full of these lurid stories of girls dying from self-induced abortions. And the idea of restricting that right, I just knew that the reality was abortions have always been here. They were always going to be here. And if women didn't have access to safe abortions, they were going to die in big ways. And I was part of mobilizing for women's lives.
At that point, I wasn't yet a historian or even aware that I could be a historian. But I was there for really, in a sense, the same reason. You know, when I teach about the revolution and I try to explain to my students why you would get passionately upset about a right that seems abstract, I think about my engagement with the question of abortion, because I didn't necessarily assume I was going to have children. I certainly didn't necessarily assume that I would ever need to have an abortion for that reason. But I understood how fundamentally this was something that I had a right to decide for myself. And so in, I think, 1988, so I think the year before, I became really involved in pro-choice activism. And I joined up, I think it was a combination of Planned Parenthood and NARAL, were organizing these meetings where people could get together, and we trained in defending clinics from attackers.
Where were you at the time?
I was living in Northern Virginia, which is partly how I ended up marching in Washington, but I was living in Northern Virginia, and it was passive resistance. We were being trained in passive resistance, and we were, you know, trained how to, you know, sit on people to keep them from getting past you, and a variety of different things to do to stop people from closing down clinics.
I'm sorry, you've been trained to sit on people?
I was trained to sit on people. I wasn't.
Boy, your classrooms must be really well organized.
Yeah, I haven't exercised that sitting on people sort of mode of control probably since 1988.
It was Samuel Adams, not John Adams.
Professor Freeman, stand up.
That's right.
But I took part in a Saturday mornings, really early in the morning. We would be assigned, a group of us, to a clinic to basically just be there and make sure that women had the right to enter and leave these women's health clinics where they happened to also perform abortions. And in 1988, we would get there really early. I was sitting in the lobby of one of these clinics, and we got a phone call in the lobby from the chief organizers, and they said, "You guys are the target today." And so, you know, there were probably about a dozen of us, And suddenly we knew that busloads of people, I think at the time it was Operation Rescue that was busing people around to these clinics in the Washington, D.C. area. We then knew that there were going to be busloads of anti-abortion people coming to where we were. And I got involved in a real physical protest in which there were people running at me, trying to push me out of the way. I actually did end up sitting on a man and thinking to myself, and here I am in front of a women's health clinic sitting on a man who's holding a Bible. It was one of the more bizarre experiences I had. But the idea that I was attacked physically by these people holding Bibles and called a bad Christian, which I remember thinking, yeah, you're right. I'm a bad Christian because I'm Jewish, but thanks. Go on, please. But I became really personally involved in this in a way that I felt a level of outrage that I don't know if I've felt before about an issue. So kind of along the same lines of you, the idea that this right was being attacked and taken away from me and that the people doing it were kind of along the lines of what we were talking about in the show, you know, engaging in intimidation and violence to do this, outraged me to a point that I'm not sure if I had ever been outraged at that deep a level before with anything having to do with politics in quite that way. So that sort of thing is really what brought me to take part in that march. Because I was there with other people who I'd organized with to figure out what to do for this clinic defense, I ended up positioning myself at a dividing point between anti-abortion activists and pro-choice activists, and I was sort of trying to keep the pro-choice people moving and to keep the anti-choice people away. And I was, you know, I'm 5 feet tall. I'm not a tall person. I am a small person. All 5 feet of me was engaged in like yelling at these people, you move along, you back up. Like I was like directing traffic flow at this massive protest. And my memory, I think I mentioned this to you, Heather, when we were talking about this, was that the head of NARAL, Kate Michaelman, walked by me while I was like howling and directing, and she paused for a moment, and then she said, yeah, I don't need to stop here. You just keep going, doing what you're doing. You're doing a fine job doing what you're doing. But it was, I think, for both of us, a real profound moment of thinking about rights, of political participation, of protest, of group sentiment about defending a right as a group. It had a big impact on me at the time and continues to have that kind of a power just when I think back to it.
And for me, you know, I was not involved in the pro-choice movement in that way at all. I was much more involved in the idea of the American government. And what was cool about that, and I'm wondering now, do you remember what side of the Lincoln Memorial you were on, just out of curiosity? If you're standing and looking, if you're standing on the wading pool or not, the reflecting pool, I've never waded in it, I'm just saying, but the reflecting pool, we were on the, right up close to the memorial. In fact, I believe at some point we were sitting on it, on the left-hand side.
I think I was more down on the mall somewhere.
Okay. But it was a really interesting moment for me to understand what it meant to have a voice in democracy, because the people that I was there with were a bunch of friends, and they ranged from some white male friends from Maine and my Cherokee Seminole friends from Oklahoma. You know, it's a funny thing because there's never enough rooms in Washington when there's a march. And so people are sleeping on each other's floors in different hotel rooms. And my friend from Maine had his girlfriend. And it just was this sense of this is our country.
Us.
And there were so many voices, the Oklahoma voices, I don't think had ever come to Washington before, but this is a really important issue, of course, in the indigenous community. And it just was a really powerful moment in terms of recognizing that our democracy is us. And that happened to be something that we mobilized, the only time I've ever marched on Washington, but that we mobilized for, and I think maybe reflects back on what we're saying, that because of the emotions involved in this, because of the real sense of anti-womanness involved in restrictions on abortion, and all of those emotional things were something that got me involved in the larger political process in a much more visceral way than I had ever been before.
And let me ask you a question. The March for Women that happened during the Trump presidency, what year was that? When was that?
It was the day after inauguration. It was January 21st, I think.
Because I took part in that in New York, and I put on the T-shirt that I had from the Washington March, which I wore to this march. And I remember kind of trying to figure out where to enter the crowd to take part in the march. And someone saw that t-shirt, an older woman saw that t-shirt and like ushered me in. You know, yeah. She was like, you belong here, like, come on in. And it was like a direct link between that past moment and the present in a way that, again, mattered in a kind of deep emotional way. Wasn't Washington, but again, the same feeling of being there with all of these people who care passionately about something. And for that reason, give you a sense of hope about the possibility for positive change.
Well, and that's something that we really didn't talk about in the episode, because I really wanted to focus on civil rights and on constitutional rights, but also, you know, the issue of women reclaiming their position in American society is a through line, is an absolute through line from the 1950s onward and before that. But really, the issue of abortion has become not only an issue of rights, but also an issue of women's voices. And that I'm 100% with you. The idea of women taking not only a stand on having control over their reproductive rights, but also having access to American society, and now taking control of voting and the American government is its own story. And a crucially important one, and one that you and I, by virtue of when we were born and the roles we took on in society, have weirdly, to my mind, become actors in. That's a parallel story that is as interesting, and maybe someday we should talk about that.
I was about to say that we should, because in so many ways, women are finding their voices and are claiming a kind of power in a different way and a more public way than I've seen in a while, even just in the number of women holding public office right now, that's clear. But we're in a really interesting moment as far as women and power and politics is concerned.
And a number of us actually got our real entry into politics over the issue of abortion,
right,
and the issue of reproductive rights.
Right. You know, we talked before about 1980 and the feelings we had about that election and about Reagan running for president at that time. And I think I mentioned at some point, it might have been in a backstage episode, about that being my first sort of political moment. I went to hear him speak and I was stunned because they were singing religious songs before he came out. And I sat there with a big question mark above my head going, wait, what about church and state? But the other thing that happened at that moment was people, it was on a college campus, so that people had put signs up around where this was going to take place and coat hangers. They had wire hangers for, you know, an abortion protest sign, you know, that if it's illegal, people are going to go back to using coat hangers to self-induce abortion. And Reagan lost his cool. We actually made the press because there were people yelling about abortion rights, about the right to make that kind of a choice. And he lost his cool and began yelling at us, you know, you kids. It was quite a moment, made the news. But abortion was part of that moment for me too. All kinds of political awakenings happened really in the 1980s in a variety of different ways that stayed with me ever since. Thank you for joining us backstage.
Be sure to write to us with your thoughts and questions at letters@cafe.com. See you next time.